Hello and welcome to an episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Rethink Possible explores pockets of awesomeness taking place in school districts as told by school district leaders. I'm Bob McDowell, your host. Let's dig in. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Superintendent Sarah Paul of North Branch Area Public Schools, and she is a special guest with her, David Grady, who is the North Branch Education Association's president. And we're going to be talking to them about Teacher Registered Apprentice Program. And I think this is just intriguing, and where I want to start with it is, how did we end up having the two of you together doing this work?
Well, first, thanks for having us. It's important to be here together. You know, we say our program's called Forward Together for a reason, and we're excited to share our story of partnership in action. So your question kind of brings us back to, when was that? It was the spring of...
2 years ago, I think.
2 years ago, yeah. And go ahead.
And Sarah and I meet on occasion a couple times a month, and at one point I brought up to her, I was getting very concerned about the teacher shortage, which I've been teaching for over 30 years, and I never thought I would see in my career, but it's starting to happen, and it's specifically the lack of substitute teachers. And I just brought that up to her in one of our meetings, thinking that it would, you know, maybe we talk about some, you know, ideas in each building about what to do. And it didn't take very long. And Sarah started coming back with some ideas about what we could do. And what would you say? Probably 2 or 3 months later, mm-hmm. you had started to look into this program.
Yeah. So, and over the summer, I went to Germany. I applied and I was accepted to go to Germany on a Fulbright fellowship to study their apprenticeship model. And then when I got back, we were wanting to learn more together. So we went to a round table that was sponsored by the Department of Labor and Industry. And from there, we just really started taking one step at a time through this change process and putting the kind of structures together that would need to be in place in order to launch a program like this.
So then for our listeners, can you explain what is a teacher registered apprentice program? What is this thing?
So I think a lot of people are aware of the great work happening across the state with Grow Your Own programs. That kind of become a term that people are really familiar with this. A registered teacher apprenticeship program is a structured program that combines paid hands-on experiences that the apprentice is working with a mentor teacher. They're doing their college coursework as part of their job on the job training to prepare apprentices for their teacher accreditation.
Are they a part of the staff then when they come on board, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a big part of the story is, we know that there are people that are already deeply connected to students and our communities that are working in school, our school system and school systems across the state. And a big part of this is helping them find a path to that teaching licensure. So when we began, we started with listening sessions, and we wanted to make sure to first of all engage and listen to current education assistants, because they would end up being the apprentices, and just shared with them a little bit about this opportunity to earn while you learn, and walked them through the model that the Department of Labor and Industry has been doing this with multiple other industries for many, many years. We're borrowing from the trades and having a chance to share a little bit about what we were learning and just see what was on their minds in terms of things that would be important to them. And then we did the same with our teachers, because you can't have an apprenticeship model without a mentor or journey teacher. And so we wanted to hear from them. What are the things that excite you? What are the things that make you nervous? What are the things that you feel would be important for you to participate? And then we also reached out to, we have community engagement events in our school district. And so we talked with our Hmong families and our Hispanic families, American Indian families, and did the same, because we're a growing community up here. It's partly why David was concerned about, here we're growing as a school district. We've already got a shortage problem. with filling positions with licensed teachers. And where are we going to be in 5 years? Where are we going to be in 10 years? And so as our community's growing, reaching out to them as well to say, you've moved up here, instead of driving, you know, half hour, 45 minutes there and back to a job, have you ever thought of working with the school district? And so that was a big part of our shared learning, because part of this model, you have to put together memorandums of agreement with your union, both with your support staff, with your teachers union, and hit a variety of factors, which we can go into, that are part of that agreement. And listening to the people we wanted to engage was a huge first step.
And for me, when we got to this point, then I put my union hat on and I thought, okay, now we have to make sure that this is going to be a sustainable program. Because if you take like a student teacher, a traditional model student teacher, it feels a lot heavier than that. It feels like it's a lot more than that. And I told Sarah, I said, it's really important that we make this sustainable. And in order to make it sustainable, you got to have buy-in from the apprentices, and you have to have buy-in from the journey teachers. And we don't want a program that everybody tries this once, and after the end of the program, they said, I'm not doing that again. We wanted to make it so that people would say, hey, can I be a part of this program?
So that's perfect segue into what my next question would end up being, which really is, you do the listening sessions, you get your background information, you understand what to the degree to which that this is something we think we can do. What, from an implementation lens, what did that look like to get that buy-in? What did you actually have to do in order to have those conversations? What did that look like?
Well, I'll speak to the education assistants first. They had the opportunity to express interest. There was a sign-up form that they could fill out. And our administrators in each building were involved in having a conversation about, like, you know, what is it that kind of is drawing you to this? And gave them opportunities to, you know, have a one-on-one conversation, shadow a teacher, go in and observe. We took advantage of the Pelsby pilot sub program so that we put them in our, if they had met the criteria, they were allowed to go in and see what it was like running a classroom for the day. That really helped a lot, because we had some of our EAs said, I love the job I do right now. What I want is a fit for me right in what I'm doing. The teaching is really exhausting, and I don't know right now if that's a fit for me. Others really dove into that and said, I just, the thought of really developing my art of teaching and really understanding like the logistics and the things that you do to actually have a successful classroom stayed the course. So that was one piece as a kind of a first stab at your question from the education assistants. Do you want to speak to the teachers?
And one of the things I talked to Sarah about was that when I said that about we got to have buy-in from the teachers, every time you talk to a teacher about something more on their plate, mm-hmm. they say, I need time or I don't have enough time. So I said, we're going to have to figure out a way to create time for them to do this, to work with the apprenticeship teacher, and there's got to be a compensation piece to this. And so Sarah and I sat down and we discussed this, and we looked at what we thought would be the amount of time spent. Sarah's been very good about saying things like, you know, after this program is over, we can revisit the MOU and see did it work. I'm going to be meeting with the teachers as we go ongoing to find out the good things and the bad things, because I'm sure it's not going to be perfectly smooth, and we want to tweak it as we can while we go to just make it a better model.
So what do those check-ins look like? What is that? What are your benchmark metrics, or is there anything that you have set up for that process?
Well, first, it's probably important to understand the MOUs that we have, because that kind of informs the kind of the look fors and the feedback loops that we're having. So because we were just talking about our teachers, the time, we have release time that we build in with into the model. And we've got two different apprenticeship models happening right now. And so our MOUs provide some kind of unique flexibility in terms of how each of those emerged. One is an early learning model that we're doing with childcare aware, and one is a special education licensure that we're doing in partnership with two other school districts. So we have a cohort of 25 apprentices total that are working together in that model. And so even with the two very different models, our teachers have release time that they have to collaborate. And then they were paid to do the training for the mentorship training. And each of the models, the training looked different. And then they have a stipend that they have for per each apprentice that they work with. And right now we have 8 apprentices, and each teacher is working with 1 apprentice. We do have 1 teacher working with 2 apprentices, and so that teacher is getting 2 stipends. And that's just how we kind of laid that out. And then for our apprentices, we wanted to make sure that part of this ongoing way of checking in was built into the way that we designed this. And so for apprentices, they typically work a 35-hour week. Now our apprentices work 40-hour week, so they have 5 extra hours built into their schedule. We also have a wage differential that as they move closer to earning their license, they're getting extra amount per hour in their paycheck, and that's built into the MOU. And then we also have the professional development days that teachers have in their contract. Our apprentices are also on site and get paid for those additional professional development days, because the feedback loops and the check-ins are important, first of all, with the journey teacher and the apprentice, and then with our on-site administrators, the principals that are, we have 2 principals that are leading one program, one leading another, so they're the lead there. And then we also have a half-time apprenticeship coordinator that's making sure that we're boots on the ground, logistics are set up, and that any of the questions that come up, that they can be brought to the lead administrator. And whether that comes to me or to David, we're able to kind of quickly resolve any of the questions that could become major questions if there was too much of a delay in, you know, getting back to them. So those are some of the things that kind of were as part of our change readiness, making sure that those design elements were in place. Because right now, Rochelle is our coordinator, and she's, we're building the plane while we're flying it. And sometimes that phrase always bothered me, but I really love it in this sense, because there's so much that she's responding to and that they're making adjustments and making tweaks and changes, because that's what you do when you have that stance of receiving feedback. And so I've learned to appreciate that phrase more than I ever have in the past.
Yes. And I struggle with that phrase also.
Yes.
that is not how I do my
right.
do things. So, but I agree. It helps all those different things. And with me meeting with those other teachers periodically, it just feeds into that design element.
Just to stick on this a little bit with regard to change readiness, building the plane, everything that kind of comes into that sphere. What type of pre-work with teachers, even ones that aren't a part of this right now, but pre-work with teachers, pre-work with building administrators, have you found has needed to be done in order to minimize what we typically call resistance to something? Or like, what's that pre, are there some examples of what that pre-work looks like that you've been doing?
Well, I can share what, when this process started, we have a monthly executive board meeting for the union. And so I started sharing where we're moving to. And it helps me with my executive board to have discussions about this, because they'll think of things that I don't. So we had informal learning sessions with the executive board of the union over the course of months while we talked about things. And some of those things were, you know, how do we figure time in? How do we figure compensation? And so I had quite a few sessions that I brought this topic up and we discussed as an executive board.
Yeah, great example. And then on the kind of administrative side, this has been a conversation from the classroom all the way to the boardroom. Our board has been involved right from the beginning in terms of identifying that this was a direction we wanted to explore. They they've asked great questions. And then our administrative team, I think feeling the pinch and the impact on culture when there's unfilled positions, I think for them, they felt like, you know, we have to have a spirit of abundance as we look at all of the different grow your own opportunities, this being one of them. We have right now, not apprenticeship model, but at our high school, we have 4 special educators that are in grow your own program opportunities just at that one site. And then they have an apprentice. And we are so fortunate that we've got some good supports in place that people are really finding what a fit and so grateful for opportunities to pursue their license. But grow your own programs are, you come and you teach all day, and then at night you go and you do your coursework or on Saturdays. That's what a grow your own program right now looks like. An apprentice is able to have all of that opportunity, the theory and practice blended into their day. And so when you have that kind of opportunity, our principals were looking at how they could make it a culture builder and a way that was going to really be able to have people really not just buy in, but truly believe in the impact that that partnership could have on what the work looked like and also what the impact could be on students. Because the pressures on teachers when we are short-staffed is so significant. And I think that was just really the tie that bound to really looking and innovating together.
And I think that's one of the reasons that this has been a good sell to the teachers, is because they lived that side of it where they're having to leave on their prep time during the day. They're having to go into somebody else's classroom and teach for an hour, and they're frustrated. So I think that helped with the buy-in, is that, hey, we're out here trying to fix this problem or at least alleviate this problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to go back just a little bit to the statement you made about being really important to the board and running from classroom to the boardroom. Is there part of your strategic plan that this ties directly into?
Yes, it's a board and superintendent goal.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Yeah, I find that most of the time when I'm having these conversations, the things that people are spending a lot of time on and implementing, they're very much so able to overtly link it back to that strategic plan, that board goal or something like that. And so I wanted to call that out, that was what this was a piece of.
You know, whenever you're innovating and you're first, there's really a lot of risks. And so that board level support has been huge, because it's the board's courage, and then it's an apprentice that put themselves out there, went through the steps to really determine that this was something they were going to go after, go through all of the process with the college and in order to get their application and all that in, and ready to really make a significant commitment and change in their life. And we're still working on the honoring the processes that Pelsby has to do, because they are a quality standard. We need their quality standard, but this is new to them, so it takes time. Department of Labor and Industry, this is going to be one of the first we're approving. So they want to make sure they're not making a miss on making sure that all they need to make sure that they're doing their checks on the program design. And in the meantime, you're kind of ready to go, but you got to help everybody understand that everybody needs to be part of saying yes to the solution, because you don't want big major blind spots when you're going into something that is going to harm the success right off the bat. But it's really part of, you get people excited and everybody's ready to go, and then you got to figure out how to keep the excitement there when you have a significant weight in the process. And that was a big part of navigating the start to this.
That perfectly leads into communication. So clearly on the front end of this, there's a lot of communication that goes on. You've built in benchmarks, you've built in checkpoints. What does it look like to communicate internally and externally so that everybody's staying on the same page, whether it's teachers, it's administrators, it's the public, it's the school board, it's the organizations you're partnering with? What does that look like?
You know, I think there's some really important reminders that a registered apprenticeship to the Department of Labor and Industry is different. But you unite around the opportunity and the energy that we're doing something together, but the details and the technical program pieces, there's a temptation for that to trip us up. So the down and in conversation is making sure that we're very much aware and that we're following the requirements for this to be run as a true apprenticeship model that's registered through the Department of Labor and Industry. And then the up and out really is making sure that we're continuing to focus on the why and the energy behind the impact not only it's having on the program participants, but the school culture, and most importantly, on our students. And that these are thinking about the people in our community that we can continue to support in an innovative model that truly love these kids and want to be in our community, and tapping into that resource and removing those barriers so that they can be successful. I think that that your question of communication, you never can do enough communicating, but it's an honor and privilege every time we do get to talk about it and help people, you know, continue to understand those details and how they're part of making it happen. Our business office, you could have walked in 3 weeks ago and I think they all would have been pulling their hair out, because there's reporting things that they have to code differently and then have to redo it because this apprenticeship program is a little bit different than the other. And yet you have that conversation and you explain and validate that it's extra work and I'm sorry that that wasn't as clear the first time around, but then they feel part of it and they know their important role that they play. Because literally there's so many positions in this district that are part of the success of how this is launched, that right now is impacting the lives of 8 future teachers, and we'll start to have graduates of these programs in June of 2026. But you really have a whole army behind them of people that have been part of making it happen.
And she's being modest. She's like juggling 8 balls every time I see her. She's got all these things going on. I feel like I'm doing a part of this, and I feel like I've got things just bouncing around in my head all the time about what am I going to do? When am I going to meet with these people? I'm doing like a little bit of it, and she's doing all the rest. And I just, it just amazes me every time we start talking and how far we're moving ahead and all of the things that she's done. Plus she's a superintendent, so she's got that too.
Right. What with these 8 people, let's focus there a little bit. So we fast forward to their graduation. So then what does that trajectory look like for them?
Well, we're a growing district, so we are ready for them to be stepping into a teaching role and feeling really confident and well prepared that they're ready to hit the ground running.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see one of them and say, welcome to the teaching profession.
Nice. Well, I end all of these with the same question, which is, if you were in a room talking with a superintendent, and in this case, with another union president, right, or maybe paired up, because it truly is, there's no way you do this without a partnership. That's clear. What would be the 1, 2, or 3 things that you would give as advice that if you're going to do this, these are the 1, 2, or 3 things that you have to have in order to make this happen?
The biggest one for me is you have to create a plan that's sustainable. I don't want this to be a one and done thing. I've done a lot of one and done things in my career in education, and I want this to be sustainable. And with that comes a lot of legwork behind it to make sure that at the end of this 18-month process, that people come to us and say, hey, I want to be part of this.
And my advice would be perfect follow-up to that. This cannot be done by one single district alone. You have to work with other school districts. So mine would be a pitch for that superintendent that we're launching a fall 2025 autism and EBD cohort. We are excited for that cohort to be working with Mankato State, Minnesota State Mankato. We have to have 25 apprentices for them to be able to staff it and run it. So this model works when we work together. So there's room at the table for a small school district that has a need for one apprentice. There's a spot at the table for a district that needs eight. But that's what we need, is we need to be able to come together and realize that when these apprentices and the journey teachers are also getting to collaborate and work with each other, there is learning far beyond what I think we ever imagined, because it's truly a shared learning model that is just so a value add for both the journey teacher and the apprentice and everybody else that touches it. The other thing I would say is that special education was our starting point, but we are looking to form cohorts for math because we have a high need in math, and then career and technical education. So I think whenever anybody comes in, they're bringing great ideas. And so it's not about just coming and trying to figure out what somebody else did. When you truly partner with people, they're going to add so much value to this model as it continues to emerge.
Well, it's very clear to me why you're calling this forward together. And I really want to thank both of you for being with me today and talking about your teacher registered apprentice program. Today I've been talking with Superintendent Sarah Paul of North Branch Area Public Schools and David Grady, North Branch Education Association's president. Thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.